If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, it's Tuesday, which means it's Pam, your Gordon sandwich day. I'm here in the middle. I'm obviously the meat, and there's two bits of bread on either side. David Buick.
Interesting introduction. Good morning,
sir. I think it was awful, actually. Yeah. Senior market commentator for Panmure Gordon, and Simon French, chief economist for Panmure Gordon. Right, David, you've got lots of things on your mind today.
Issues, various things. Obviously, markets, which are extraordinary and remain so. I think I'm still troubled as a result of this rally by the fact that I'm not certain how robust the banks are around the world, to be perfectly honest. I'm comfortable with US banks because I think they took their medicine and they've invoked the kind of inputs that they need to get matters right. But here in the UK, we had a bad result from Standard Chartered this morning, slightly worse than expected. And you've got to remember that you can't say, well, it's a mirror image of HSBC because HSBC is seven times the size of Standard Chartered. Tomorrow, of course, we're going to get, or should I say on Thursday, we get Lloyds and RBS on Friday. And it's interesting, isn't it, since the government sold that 10% of Lloyds, which Morgan Stanley, I thought, did brilliantly by just dripping it out at somewhere around 68 to 70 pence, 71 pence or whatever it was. And now here is 10 points underwater, or 10p underwater, which is a significant percentage at around 63 pence this morning, as against 73 pence at break even. Royal Bank of Scotland, as we know, on Friday is likely to declare a loss of 1 billion, plus impairment charges and fines of 2 billion on top of that for mortgage issues and PPI. And it's work in progress, but people say...
Yeah, work in progress for 7 years.
I don't think you realised. Well, I'm being patronising. You're the last person I've been patronising. I don't think we realised how damaged that bank was and how close it was to going to the war. It was horrendous.
Right.
And so...
That wasn't the point. The point was there wasn't much choice. It was a matter of UK credibility and we had to save the bank. But
oh, no. I'm just saying, I don't think people realised what a horrific state of disrepair it was in.
No, as I said to Simon, I was waiting for Jeremy Corbyn to renationalise it when he comes to power.
Hopefully I'll be dead and buried when that event comes up. But still, there we go.
Well, it's him or Boris, isn't it? Or is it?
Well, should we open the batting? Come on.
Well, just before we leave banks, ask the question. There's probably a lot of people who look at the amount of money, public money, that has been pumped into RBS. And let's call it for what it was. It was a strategic industrial policy state support. And they look around at our steel producers, our manufacturing producers around the country who are suffering at the moment, albeit a bit of a respite potentially from sterling. Why are they not getting the same support?
The trouble is that I think when you've been on a diet of, shall we say, egg and chips, and let's call the service sector egg and chips for so many years, in fact, probably, Simon, since the turn of the century, since 2000, the service sector has proved to be a really decent Arthur Daly, for want of a better expression. And it became too convenient. And as a result of which, our industrial base, which was already disappearing, has had received absolutely no support at all. I mean, you can understand the people that what I used to call in the old Dorman Long days up in Middlesbrough, near your part of the world, you know, and then you go down to South Wales, what's happened to the steel industry down there, and then you go to Scunthorpe.
Yeah.
But little nuggets of decency, such as Nissan in Sunderland, and, you know, the Swindon factories that have done so well for Honda.
Yeah.
And we are number two to Germany in terms of that. But I can't answer your question is...
But I wanted to segue from that point into the EU referendum, which I think was where Zach was going, because actually...
I wasn't going. I was just going to say, because nobody's actually said it, the reason they saved the banks is because most politicians are lawyers, and their chief source of income are the banks. They wouldn't save a steel company or a paper mill or anything else because they don't really do much business with them. But with banks, that's why they save them. They save that sector. It was actually shameless.
Deeply cynical, possibly true.
Well, one of the things that is starting to come across in the opinion polling for the EU referendum, if we just move in that direction, is that there's discontent outside the the London South East financial centre or financially influenced part of the UK economy, which is very easily tapped into by those people who want a UK separate from the UK because it can be used as an example of those liberal elite is based in London who don't really understand the needs of the kind of, you know, your phrase, the widget maker in Wisbeach. But my challenge to you, because I know you're strongly in favour of the UK leaving, is that that's a bit of a rogue argument. It's nothing to do with the EU. It's to do with very much domestically orientated public policy.
Quite hard to. I mean, one of the things I'm going to make very clear now is that I respect this gentleman, who I've only known for a couple of years. He's probably the best economist I've met in 53 years in the City of London. And I'm certainly not going to get involved in a slanging match to the same degree that Mr. Johnson has with Mr. Cameron, which was totally unnecessary. So I can't fully answer that question, but all I can say is that I was in a chat show last night on radio, and all the listeners were from the North. Mm-hmm. And to a man, they all wanted to stay in for the reasons you've given. They believe that this government and the previous government had given workers absolutely no protection at all as regards their job, and they do actually see that the European Union will actually do that.
That's awful. That is awful, isn't it?
It's awful, but I'm telling the truth. And I'm a Brexit man, as Simon will tell you.
Yes, yeah.
And it was unequivocal, and I went, whew. But my point is this, is I believe very, very profoundly that if the European Union had a decent track record over the last 15 to 20 years in terms of achievement, I wouldn't be as concerned I am. I believe it's an absolute melting pot of a disaster. And for the United Kingdom to nail its flag to the mast on an organization that is badly run, undemocratic, and not actually performing particularly well, is not enough.
But unfortunately, if you live outside London, you'd have exactly the same view of Westminster, which is, I think, a much more hideous gravy train.
I get the impression you guys are ganging up on me.
It's just 2-1. It's quite fair.
But could I just go on and finish my final thing, is that the one thing that would make me change my mind, and hell's got a better chance of freezing over, is that if the European Court of Justice, and if the European Courts of Human Rights, we did not have to abide by their rule books and we had our own laws, then I think you'd have some safety and some plausible reasons for possibly carrying on. But all the other arguments, such as defence and things like
that. So for you, it's judicial sovereignty rather than the economic argument?
But I think from the judicial sovereignty.
Or do you think the economic argument stacks up?
I don't think the economic argument stacks up. I think from the judicial requirements that I need, I think an improvement in the economic activity within this country could possibly be stimulated rather more quickly. I mean, this will run and run, and the fact remains is that we have in this country, in my opinion, this is the last chance saloon, and I'd love to see it for my children and for my grandchildren. Is it a leap into the dark? Of course it is. I'd be lying through my teeth if I didn't say it was. But let's be bold and forthcoming, and I think we can actually achieve it. And I think all the business about trade barriers, they will be broken down because there's so much tit for tat. Well, if you withdraw on me, I'm not going to do this with you. So eventually people will be pragmatic and get round a table and actually deal with it. You're looking with me in great concern. You obviously disagree. Come on, tell me.
No, I'm just saying that if the Brexit people lose in June, would you just finally say, look, it's never going to happen and it shouldn't happen?
Yep.
And that's it.
Yeah, I would do.
You wouldn't do a Nicholas Sturgeon and keep having referendum 2-3.
If the people of this country on the 23rd of June win the to stay into the European Union, you won't hear from me again, because I believe that this is Custer's last stand. I think it's so important, and I think it's very important. But you can't keep banging on when a situation has been evolved where we all wanted a referendum, we've got it. Speak or forever hold your peace, and let's get on with life.
But unfortunately, I think you're going to lose because the government is pro-Europe, so you're going to lose.
David, can I ask, there's a lot of, I'm sure, TIP TV viewers who might be sort of wavering, and they're thinking there are examples of Norway, of Switzerland, to a lesser extent of Iceland, who have access to the EEC, but aren't part of the European Union. And there's increasing evidence that while that sounds appealing, there is there's a lot of alignment that they need to do with the existing regulations, the existing structures of the European Union, and they have zero say on how those are drawn together. What's kind of your response to those?
My response to that is not to try and be a smart aleck, because you're making a serious statement, which I respect. But, Simon, I put it to you that countries of 4 million people, 3 million people, and 300,000 people are not the same as a country of 60 million people, which is the fifth largest economy in the world. But your argument stacks up, and it's pointless me trying to go against it. But it's always the same. I think when you start equating Greece with other countries in Europe, you know, as regards their plight. I mean, you and I both know we've discussed this to a point of distraction and boredom, and we're going to be like a bad old penny coming back again. A country of 11 million people with that kind of debt and no growth has zero chance in either repaying that debt or going into full growth in perpetuity.
David Buick, senior market commentator for Panmure Gordon, thank you very much for bearing up under the strain. We'll be back after the break.